Hola. If this broadcast stops for some reason, it'll be archived on my website. I'm just gonna play some guitar and watch some news. This is like AM radio style, or FM radio style, because I'm not gonna do video, it's just gonna be audio. Sometimes I watch MSNBC or CNN and comment either on Twitter or like this. They're talking about MSNBC, they're talking about Ukraine. They're already opinionated and they already assume a lot of things, so listening to them now is kind of a waste of time. But at least the normal hosts are back, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. We get a lot of the truth when it comes to war. I think we get it through a lot of filters. And by the time we get it, it's not exactly what's going on. And I think that they don't report on a lot of battles and losses and things. At least not in real time. They select and choose, you know, which things they want us to know and when they want us to know it. To a degree. Because if a bunch of things happen in a long time, they get away with not reporting at all. And it just so happens to fit into their politics and what they want to report, of course. I visit websites besides common fundamental American ones. And they're different. And they report on other news. In Ukraine. But the U.S. does not report them.
Prisoner swap in remained the same. In prison, WNBA star Brittany Griner would go on to Arizona as well for the latest on tomorrow's key primary races as candidates backed by Donald Trump appear poised for victory. Is that good news for Democrats? Our panel is standing by for that in just a few minutes. I just wanted to recap all that's going on at the top of the hour here. But back to you, Ukraine Admiral Stavridis. The question I have is, given that people in the Donetsk region are being told to leave their homes by the weekend, evacuate, there are still massive killings and atrocities happening in Ukraine. The narrative seems to be that Ukraine is winning. But is it? And how long can this go on?
Every day there's a war in their country today, they're not winning.
War is the most unpredictable human.
I think the best they can do is
spin and turn. Let's also recognize that Vladimir Putin
has a lot of people are dying, they're spending resources, they're losing refugees.
The ability to move terrorists, Chechens, Syrians into the fight, to bring in mercenaries.
And who loses the most? Russia or Ukraine? We'll see them as.
He could do a false flag operation and attack one of these grain ships coming out. So he's
polarizing the world a bit.
For a stand in the gears here. This is far from a sweeping new moment in the war, but you just feel those tectonic plates starting to shift.
Because of energy.
Favor the Ukrainians as we sit here this morning.
Hey, Mark, let's talk manpower and morale. So your officials I spoke to last week said the Russia is really struggling here to sort of dovetail with our conversation. The rates of advances have been that small. They're having a really hard time getting people to the front. But as much as the potential risk has been that time was on Putin's side, because he isn't answering the doors, he's not worried about Phil Bender, he's not the one who's gas supplies being shut off. But time is not on his side. This seems to be exhausting his troops. Give us a sense as to what you see in the mid partnership.
This is buffering. It's pausing on MSNBC, talking about the war. It's like Ukraine launches. What they obviously wanted me to think was that Ukraine's doing well in the war after doing badly earlier this month. Whether that's true or not, is anybody's guess. Well, I'm going to try another station because this keeps buffering. This is CNN. If that was a lead story at 6 a.m. or not. I didn't start watching until 7 a.m. So I'm not sure. Right before 7 a.m. So that was a lead story at 7. Did definitely a lot of other stories. Thank you. Take a couple of nails. Kill this one and go ahead and see if I could get the news on this one. Cause that one's having a hard time.
Asia trip.
Yeah.
Has the White House talked to her about this directly, and has the White House heard
Taiwan.
Of any specific threats from China when it comes to this visit?
Well, the speaker will talk to her to travel. We'll let her and her staff speak to this trip that she's on. We absolutely have, before she left, as you know, communicated with her and her team about the context, geopolitical context, the facts, our analysis of what was going on in the region at every stop on this trip, as we always do. I'm not going to talk about security requirements, but clearly we want to make sure that when she travels overseas, she can do so safely and securely, and we're going to make sure of that. There's no reason for the Chinese rhetoric. There's no reason for any actions to be taken. It is not uncommon for congressional leaders to travel to Taiwan. It is very much in keeping with our policy and consistent with our support to Taiwan under the Taiwan Relations Act. We shouldn't be, as a country, we shouldn't be intimidated by that rhetoric or those potential actions. This is an important trip for the speaker to be on, and we're going to do whatever we can to support her.
Is the U.S. prepared for any fallout from China?
I think I don't want to get ahead of where things are, Brianna. There's no change to our policy, no change to our focus on trying to keep a free and safe and open Indo-Pacific. And the United States has a lot of capacity across all levers of government power to make sure that we can do that.
You said it's an important trip for her to be on. Why is that?
Well, this is an important region. It's one of the most critical regions for our economy, tied to the global economy. There is a lot of tensions geopolitically, not just because of China, but because of North Korea and other tensions in the region. So there's an awful lot of business for the Speaker of the House to conduct on a trip like this. And you know, she can speak to her stops and what she's trying to accomplish. But I will tell you just a couple of points. Five of our seven treaty alliances are in the Indo-Pacific region. So the United States, President Biden, is committed to making sure we revitalize those alliances and that we are able to meet our security commitments in their region. Number two, it's a very dynamic region right now, and part of that dynamism is caused by the aggressive and coercive behavior that China is conducting throughout the region, both in the north and the south.
Is it important for her to be in Taiwan?
That is for the speaker to talk to. Okay. It is important for the United States to make sure, let me make this clear, that
this
when
like
U.S. government officials travel to Taiwan, they can do so safely and securely.
Russia made a counteroffer
like
in the proposed
like kind of
prisoner swap
from the Union
for Americans Brittany Griner and Paul Whelan, as you obviously
and
know, and they want to include Vadim Krasikov, or that is at least their proposal, who was convicted of murder in Germany recently.
The biggest country in the world.
You've spoken this a little bit, but explain, why is a Victor Boot, who the U.S. is willing to trade, different from a Krasikov?
I'm not going to confirm the outlines of the proposal that we set forth, Brianna. I think you know that. We're not going to negotiate this in public. But this so-called, you call it a counteroffer, we would call it a bad faith attempt to avoid what is a serious proposal already on the table. And oh, by the way, Brianna, has been on the table now for several weeks.
And it seems like Taiwan
bad faith, why? Is it intentional, do you believe, by Russia to have the U.S. kind of, you know, asking Germany for a favor as Russia is cutting Germany's energy supply? Why is it bad faith?
Holding two Americans who have been wrongfully detained hostage for a convicted murderer in a third country. It's just we don't consider that a serious counteroffer
at all.
It's nothing more than a bad faith attempt by the Russians publicly to avoid what is a serious proposal, one that we aren't making detailed in public and has been on the books for several weeks, and we urge the Russians to accept it.
I know the president watching this burn pit sort of debacle play out on the Hill with some interest, calling in there over the weekend. Why does he think Republicans reverse their vote?
I don't think the president's going to speak for Republicans and why they did this. I think he has spoken loudly and clearly. You heard Secretary of the VA, Dennis McDonough, do so well about how incorrigible that this behavior is. You want to be angry about a piece of legislation that moved past you, okay, fine. But don't hold veterans hostage. Don't make them further victims of your political ire. This act will do good things for men and women who have served in this country in dangerous places. It will expand medical care for them for toxic exposure. It'll make it easier for them to file those claims. And it will make it easier for the VA by increasing VA capacity to treat their conditions. This is all goodness, and it's all good for the men and women who have served this country, including many friends of mine. So I don't think we frankly understand the Republican psychology here. It's deeply, deeply flawed, and quite frankly, it's unpatriotic.
John Kirby, we appreciate you being with us from the White House. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
We're going to be finding bodies for weeks. That dire assessment, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. As rescue efforts continue around the clock, the death toll from the devastating flood rising. At least 28 people have died, including 4 children. And now the region is bracing for even more rain. Now, we have seen incredible stories of survival and bravery like this. A man was able to save a 98-year-old woman and 2 of her family members who were trapped in a house by rising floodwaters. Joining me now is Randy Polly. He witnessed the rescue of that elderly woman and her family. Randy, it's good to see you. Tell us about that moment at the Ambergy House and what you saw.
Well, it started early that morning there. I actually got trapped there. I was on the way to get gas.
I was thinking about writing a story about this.
I had to turn back around, and as I approached, of course, you lived that. It kind of merged me to the left up on a little hill. But it happened around 6:30 is when I got trapped. Then about 9:30 is when we had a local hero to go try to save this lady. He actually tried to go across in front of me at the time, but he couldn't. The current was so strong. So he come back, and he went back up, and he drifted over to them. For about 2 hours, there was just screaming for help. And I called 911, and there were so many calls, and the guy knew me on the phone, and he said, Randy, there's no way we can get to her. We're aware of the situation, but there's no way for us to get to her. So at that time, I didn't panic, just in fear of God, wanted somebody to help.
You answered the call when 911 couldn't. So what'd you do then?
Well, I mean, this local guy just come out of the woods on the hillside, and he just said, Randy, he said, I got to get over there. And he tried to go over there, and we tried to tell him not to go because we were fearing for his life to go over there. So he just took a hero moment and just went behind us, went up the mountain, and went down. I panicked because I sent CNN 3 videos because you all contacted me. At the first approach, he tried to break the window. We were still talking to the guy, and he finally busted glass. And he was in there for like 2 minutes, what seemed like for an eternity. Then he come back out. He said, I finally found him. So he kind of wedged his way back down. And I sent you the long video of Miss Amberg coming out. But for like 2 minutes, when they tried to get her out, she was in panic mode. Sure. She didn't want to come out because of the drift. It was just so bad.
Well, I mean.
And when they started going.
Just the
when they started going down the river.
Go on, sir.
When they started going down the river, I was commentating. And I didn't know what to do or say because I couldn't get in the current. They was going down in the middle and to the right about 30 feet. It goes straight into the river. And once I lost sight of them, I just thought that was the end of them because at that time of that morning, a lot of people know that I witnessed 2 fatalities right in front of me, in front of the school that I couldn't do nothing about. It happened in a matter of 10 seconds. And at that time, I thought we lost 4 more people. So there was nothing I could do. I felt helpless because I was stranded at 3:30. There's nothing that I could do.
You said also that you'd seen something even more terrible. You filmed some folks who were caught in a truck. Tell us about that.
I'm really not obligated to say anything much about it, but They are two that was accounted of. They got probably about 30 feet from me, and I couldn't do nothing about it because the current was so bad. In a matter of 10 seconds, the truck submerged, and it looked like that it was just going down the river, but where it went underwater is actually where they found the truck. And in that incident, you know, we lost two cows, we did in Eastern Kentucky.
Tell us before we go what your fellow Americans do to help you and your community right now in your time.
I sent a message to our state representative. She was on the grounds with the governor yesterday, and I said, are there anything that we need to let North America know in the world? Yes, there's a lot. Number one, pray. Pray for our community. It's come together like it never has before. There's over hundreds of homes without more that is devastated. And a lot of the homes have heroes. But we're going to be in this for not days, but for months and maybe years. You know, we're going to need volunteers. We're going to need donations. And money's not just going to stop this. You know, I was talking to someone about the school system yesterday. We lost all the Chromebooks to the schools. Just the necessities, from a toothbrush to cleaning supplies. It's the things that you wouldn't even think of that we use as a daily thing. We need so much help here. It is unbelievable. I took a chance to go up in a lot of the hollers. People still has not even got out. We're 5 days in this. There's no internet. There's no power. And a lot of places, they say we won't have water for months. You know, people are bringing stuff in, but as fast as they bring it in, it just gets dispirited out. We need help more than anything. I don't care if it's a pair of Fruit of the Looms. Kid babies need diapers. Babies need formula. We need everything that's possible to get here. And our state representative, Angie Hatton, and the mayor of Whitesburg, they have done a phenomenal job. We have all of our kids in school being volunteers, going on side-by-sides and four-wheelers, just to go out in the mountains and the hollers, just to deliver the what we're trying to get in, because people can't even get out to get their supply.
This is a time to step up in a sustained way to help your community. Randy Pauly, thank you for coming on CNN to tell your story and the story of your community. Good luck.
All right, God bless you and have a blessed day.
God bless you. All right, one of the Republican senators who blocked a bill to aid veterans exposed to toxic burn pits is lashing out at Jon Stewart, calling him a, quote, pseudo-celebrity. And on the positive side of things, one winning Mega Millions ticket, but so far, no winner to claim that billion-dollar prize.
Plus, a deadly mid-air mystery. Did a co-pilot fall or jump or what from a small plane? We have details ahead.
These students aren't really back in 32 BCE, but in the metaverse, one day they'll be able to watch Mark Antony debate in ancient Rome. The metaverse may be virtual, but the impact will be real.
Government price setting?
Go back home, talk to their constituents in August, and tell them what we have done as Democrats in these legislative packages that affect their everyday lives. One of the things that frankly drives me a little bit crazy, Joe, about being a Democrat is we are the party who are supporting and working for the middle class voters and for working class voters, but we don't always have an effective means to communicate that message for whatever reason. We're the ones for rebuilding the middle class. We're the ones for raising wage growth. We're the ones who are fighting for those families. Republicans are not. They're obstructing it every way. So we've got to figure out how to better communicate that message to voters. And I think doing that will help get some of these working class voters, especially Latinos, back in our wheelhouse.
So that's the big question, Adrian. I mean, it's the communications from the White House all the way down ballot. I mean, the Democrats have a ton to brag on and a ton to fight. And yet, in some ways, we're covering Republican candidates who are running around with flamethrowers and lies who could win elections if Dems don't watch out.
Yeah, Mika, and so not only do we need to brag about all of the things that we've done for working class families when we go home for August recess, but we also need to draw that contrast. Elections are about a choice. Donnie is exactly right. We have a lot to talk about when it comes to the economy, 3.6% unemployment, record job growth under President Biden, record recovery from a major pandemic. But we also have to make that choice. And when you look at some of these Republicans who are running in these Senate races, we're running against some crazy extremists. And we have to make it clear, yes, maybe things are not perfect right now, but imagine what life would be like if more Republicans had power in Washington. That's the contrast message. That is the choice that we have to talk about when we're going back home to these congressional districts, when Senate candidates are running in these tough races across the country. You look at Tim Ryan, for example. I mean, he should not be beating J.D. Vance right now by 5 or 6 points. Ohio has been, moving more and more toward a red state. But he is. And one of the reasons why is because J.D. Vance is seen as somebody who is a hardcore Trump, supported extremist policies. And a lot of voters in Ohio look at Tim Ryan and they say, he's for the working class guy, he's for me. We need to see more of that across the country. And I actually think when Democrats go home and we can pass this Inflation Reduction Act before August recess, Democrats can go home and have even more to brag about.
I know. They've had some good successes. The Saudi-backed Live Golf Tour wrapped up its second U.S.-based tournament yesterday at Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey. But for all the focus on the tournament that was hosted by a former president obsessed with crowd sizes, there were, there's no crowd.
That's kind of sad. Some of the shots on the
is that a rehearsal? There was literally nobody in attendance compared to the draw for PGA events. According to the New York Times, the attendance for yesterday's final round was substantially improved from the meager gatherings that turned out for the first two rounds. Often there had been about only 30 people surrounding the green, but the total number of fans on the grounds Sunday were no more than several thousand. The Wall Street Journal reports the tickets for Saturday's session were available on StubHub for as little as $1.
A golf tournament to watch golf pros play.
With Trump there, he's a big draw, isn't he?
Donald Trump there. Not good, Jonathan. Not good at all.
No, the biggest headline that came from that weekend, beyond the sparse crowds, was when Phil Mickelson, of course part of the Live Tour, stepped up to tee off one hole and a heckler shouted, "Do it for the Saudi royal family," which was replayed endlessly on social media, and that spectator was asked to keep it down. But it does seem to reflect a lack of enthusiasm for this project, to be sure, but also perhaps the former president. He is, of course, lent his star power, if you will, to this effort, and it didn't seem to be much in the way of a draw. It comes, though, at a moment also, because I know we're about to talk about whether Fox News may or may not be moving on from President Trump. But one noted spectator who was there with Donald Trump watching the LIV golf tournament, Tucker Carlson.
All right. There you go.
So according to Jeremy's analysis, the network has not interviewed Trump in more than 3 months and has had very little live coverage of his rallies this year. Instead, the network has showcased other Republicans like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And last month, Fox gave live coverage to a speech by former Vice President Mike Pence. Fox only showed clips of Trump's speech from that same day. Sources tell The Times Rupert Murdoch, who owns Fox, and his son Lachlan, who is its chief executive, are at odds with Trump over his refusal to accept his loss in the 2020 election. And Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has reportedly expressed concerns to the Murdochs about the potential harm Trump could do to the Republican Party's chances in upcoming elections. But the sources also told The Times Fox's coverage of Trump could increase if he announces he's running for president or if he's indicted. So let me roll back to the part where the Murdochs are at odds with him over the big lie.
Yep.
So they don't want that big lie spread on their network. I mean, that's got to be it. You know, if somebody is lying through their teeth against what is obvious, you wouldn't want your TV network soiled by lies 24/7.
No, and obviously there's litigation. Fox right now is tied up in litigation over some of the lies.
I think everybody just knows there'll be a day that he'll be gone, but it is because he's
Trump's
reached the average lifespan.
Network,
just like
billions
Biden,
of dollars
it's
and potential liability.
Every time
and
they pass away,
start because of Donald Trump and his lies about the election being
so
stolen,
ready to
voting
pass the torch.
And see, that's the thing that they can never
find other
outrun.
Not really
the law. They can never outrun the federal courts. These lies, these conspiracy theories, they wither and die under
got all kinds
the,
of other people
the,
that
the
have
heat
money too
of,
that want
of a federal judge.
On their network and
they
advertise
can never,
on their network.
They can never spread their conspiracy theories
that's
inside of a courtroom because they know they'll be sanctioned. They know they'll lose.
And I think Murdoch kind of saw that. You could see through this whole thing. And how it's going to blow over just like many other things like this.
Because these lies were spread.
Have blown over
allowed
over the years.
To spread on their network. So, yeah, they don't want... And, I mean, and they're also... Fox had, what was it, like a 2 or 3 minute video montage of former Trump supporters saying they didn't really want to support Donald Trump anymore. They wanted to support Ron DeSantis. So... It was edited. It looked almost like a campaign commercial for Ron DeSantis. Sure, that makes the guy we're looking at right now very happy. So, Donnie Deutsch, a couple things. Comment first, if you will, on Trump and the very, very small crowds at the golf tournament this past weekend. And secondly, this break with Fox News. I mean, Murdoch never really liked all reporting we ever saw. Murdoch never liked Trump. He always thought Trump was a joke. Went along with it when he was president. But looks like right now they are doing their best to abandon him.
Yeah, in media circles and, you know, kind of in the continent, out there, I mean, it's kind of known that the Murdochs are really, really sour on Trump. And look, you've had scathing editorials in the Post, you've had in the New York Post, you've had scathing editorials in the Wall Street Journal. So it's kind of on display at this point. And, you know, certainly some of the anchors, Tucker Carlson's primetime anchors, still seem to be behind Trump. But the network as a whole is clearly moving away from him. And I think it's indicative of the Republican Party. And his grip is loosening. I mean, The golf tournament is a kind of a little bit of an offbeat example, but if you think a couple of years ago, something that Trump was sponsoring in his golf tournament in Bedminster, and I mean, this would have been a semi-campaign rally, and it was empty. I mean, those pictures are embarrassing, humiliating to Trump. I mean, that is humiliating. And so I think that golf tournament is an example that his grip on the party, he's still got it, but it is loosened dramatically. You see it in many, many different forms. And Fox is probably the most crucial. I think you're going to see it. I think it's going to be amped up, and I think you're going to see them getting behind specifically Ron DeSantis. That's what's going to happen.
Yes. Yeah, maybe even move south. Donnie Deutsch, Adrian Elrod, thank you both very much for being on the show this morning. We're going to turn now to the flooding in eastern Kentucky, which is worsening as the region is hit by more storms. The governor announced the death toll is now at 28. Joining us now from Lost Creek, Kentucky, NBC News correspondent Maggie Vespa. Maggie, what can you tell us?
Well, Mika, as you pointed out, we're in Lost Creek, and this creek that you can see behind me has been growing by the minute. So definitely some tragic and ominous irony here this morning. We had about an hour and a half drive from where we're staying in Lexington, and there was torrential rain this morning, almost to the point that we had to pull over on the highway, which is really worrisome for people, because you take a look at the damage that's still left behind from the floods that happened Wednesday into Thursday. People here, to say they're still cleaning up is a massive understatement. They're just still wrapping their minds around what happened and how much was lost, and the lives lost. As you said, the death count at 28, that includes, for instance, a family of four young children from the same family. So it's just mind-numbing to people how much they've lost here across large swaths of the state. In fact, case in point, we met a family yesterday, a woman who watched her son's house be carried away by the floodwaters with her husband and her daughter-in-law on the front porch screaming. They're okay now. They were able to break a window, get out, and climb up a hill until rescuers could get to them. But take a listen, I should say, as to what she had to tell us about how this family is grappling with the trauma they've been through.
My granddaughter keeps saying that she wants to go home to her house. And we keep telling her that her house is broke, that we'll get her a new house. And she says, I want to go home to my house. I want to go to my room. And she'd asked for some of her toys, and we've just told her her toys are gone. People that might just have, you know, some damage to their house, if this starts again, they will be afraid that they will lose everything else. But like I say, for us, we've lost everything that we can possibly lose. You know, we almost lost two family members. We've got them. I mean, the material stuff we can replace. But if they would have drowned in that house at night, I mean, there's no way that, you know, the children's mommy could be replaced. You know,
if you can catch all this, I'm gonna put it on the website.
People rattling off stories like that, like they're talking about going to the grocery store. I mean, they're so inundated with loss right now. They're having conversations with each other like, what did you lose? Is your house okay? Can you find everyone in your family? Who in your family was killed? And they're just numb at this point. And also just one last thing that we want to point out. This is an area, as you know, we're in the heart of Appalachia.